जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, यशोदा नंदन व्रज जन रंजन, यशोदा नंदन व्रज जन रंजन, यमुना तीरावन चारी, यमुना तीरावन चारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नरस्कृतं नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयामुदीरये अष्टप्रायशो भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिकी। हरे कृष्ण। सो टुडे वी विल बी रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 1 चैप्टर 12। The chapter is entitled Birth of Emperor Parikshit, text number 8. So, please repeat after me. Angushta Matra Mamalam Surat Purata Maulinam Apivya Darshanamam Shyamam तडित्वासनम् अच्युतम् अंगुष्टमात्रम् अमलम् स्फुरत्पुरटमौलिनम् अपिव्यदर्शनम् श्यामम् तडित्वासनम् अच्युतम् अंगुष्टमात्रम् अमलम् स्फुरत्पुरटमौलिनम् अपिव्यदर्शनम् श्यामम् तडित्वाससम् अच्युतम्। Thank you. అంగుష్టమాత్రమలినం అపిగదర్శనం శ్యామం సజిత్వాస సమక్షతం. మాతాజీ, అంగుష్టమాత్రం అమలం పురపురట మౌలినం అపిగదర్శనం శ్యామం సజిత్వాస సమక్షతం. అంగుష్ట by the measure of a thumb, matram, only, amalam, transcendental, spurat, blazing, purata, gold, maulinam, helmet, apivya, very beautiful, darshanam, to look at, shamam, blackish, tadit, lightning, vasanam, clothing, achyutam, the infallible, the Lord. Translation by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. He, the Lord, was only thumb high, but He was all transcendental. He had a very beautiful, blackish, infallible body, and He wore a dress of lightning yellow, and a helmet of blazing gold. Thus He was seen by the child. There is no purport, so we'll go to text number 9. The Lord was enriched with four hands, earrings of molten gold, and eyes blood red with fury. As He loitered about, His club constantly encircled Him like a shooting star. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. It is said in the Brahma Samhita chapter 5 that the Supreme Lord Govinda, by His one plenary portion, enters into the halo of the universe and distributes Himself as Paramatma or the Super Soul, not only within the heart of every living being, but also within every atom of the material elements. Thus, the Lord is all-pervading by His inconceivable potency, and thus He entered the womb of Uttara to save His beloved devotee Maharaj Parikshit. In the Bhagavad Gita 9.31, the Lord assured everyone that His devotees are never to be vanquished. No one can kill a devotee of the Lord because he is protected by the Lord, and no one can save a person whom the Lord desires to kill. The Lord is all-powerful, and therefore He can both save and kill as He likes. He became visible to His devotee Maharaj Parikshit even in that awkward position, in the womb of His mother, in a shape just suitable for His vision. The Lord can become bigger than thousands of universes and can become smaller than an atom at the same time. Merciful as He is, He becomes just suitable to the vision of the limited living being. He is unlimited. He is not limited by any measurement of our calculation. He can become bigger than what we can think of, and He can become smaller than what we can conceive. But in all circumstances, He is the same all-powerful Lord. There is no difference between the thumb-like Vishnu in the womb of Uttara and the full-fledged Narayan in the Vaikuntha Dham, the kingdom of Godhead. He accepts the form of Archavigraha, worshipable deity, just to accept service from his different, incapable devotees. By the mercy of the Archavigraha, the form of the Lord in material elements, the devotees who are in the material world can easily approach the Lord, although He is not conceivable by the material senses. The Archavigraha is therefore an all-spiritual form of the Lord to be perceived by the material devotees. Such an Archavigraha of the Lord is never to be considered material. There is no difference between matter and spirit for the Lord, although there is a gulf of difference between the two in the case of the conditioned living being. For the Lord, there is nothing but spiritual existence, and similarly, there is nothing except spiritual existence for the pure devotee of the Lord in his intimate relation with the Lord. Om. ओम अज्ञानतमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदामयं दधाति स्वपदान्तिकं वन्देहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुतपदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातां सहगना रघुनाथान्वितां तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजना सहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपदां सहगना ललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च हे कृष्ण करुणा सिन्धु दीनबन्धु जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिकाकांत राधाकांत नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी नमामि हरिप्रिये पांचकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुव एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण। In this very exciting ongoing saga of what is perhaps one of the most important aspects of Srimad Bhagavatam, that is how the listener of Srimad Bhagavatam, the great personality, the pure devotee through whom we heard Srimad Bhagavatam and for eternity, Maharaj Parikshit, how he was protected and how he was born, and how Krishna dramatically saved him. So Krishna is, as mentioned in the purport, and he is unlimited, he is inconceivable. So generally what happens is that we, when we talk about, this question does come, Srila Prabhupada used to face this question also, that whenever he spoke about the protection of the Lord, and especially in such stories where it's very clear how Maharaj Parikshit was delivered, that is he partial? Why only Parikshit Maharaj? Why not my mother? Or why not my friend or somebody? Why they didn't get a chance? So that is our mundane thinking, but that question automatically comes, is he partial? Because Krishna also says that I am envious to no one, I am equal to all, and I am and whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend in me, and I am also a friend in him. So then the two are contradictory. So question is, if he himself is saying he is not partial, then how is it that he is protecting some, not protecting others? Like in the case of the Mahabharata, somebody would say that why did he only take the side of Arjun? He didn't take the side of Duryodhan, because and that's a question which I think most households probably face this, that if they have more than one sibling, more than one child, two or three or more, then usually one sibling then generally feels that rightly or wrongly, it's a perception that my parent or parents, they like the other sibling more. And even that feeling remains even when they grow older. So it's a doing of the Kali Yuga, that because of our own feeling so strongly about how we should be perceived, that this feeling does come. So nevertheless, whether there is genuinely a partiality or not, But ultimately, a parent with all good intentions is a human being. So they are fallible, they can make mistakes. But here we are talking of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is infallible, who cannot make mistakes. So, and he cares for each and every living being, and he cares more than what we, for us, much more than what we care for him. So he is actually equal to all. So when we take the word of the scriptures, then we have to understand that how is he equal to all? In what way? So first we need to ask the question that when we talk of being equal to all, does it mean that forever he is forbidden to take sides in a conflict, that he cannot enter in any conflict? Because what it means is that Krishna's equality towards everyone is seen in two ways. One is that he is giving universal opportunities, that means opportunity for everyone, and at the same time he reciprocates according to how we react. These are the two fundamental things on which he's, it's not that he's passive. Equality does not mean that Krishna has to be passive. He's equal to giving everyone an opportunity as well as he's reciprocating according to how we reciprocate. Equal opportunity because he is the ultimate parent. He is the ultimate well-wisher of all. And he will always want to be with us, even if we, whether we have virtuous qualities or whether we are against him, Krishna will always be responsibly looking after us. He'll be wanting to see that in our spiritual journey, or any, even if the living entity is not inclined to spirituality, he will always be waiting and waiting. In the same way that he's always, wanting that we come towards him. And at the same time, when we talk of proportional reciprocity, that means he reciprocates according to how we reciprocate. That means that ultimately, reciprocal nature is something which is what makes the relationship relishable. You cannot have, like for instance, you have any authority, like father or mentor, coach, somebody who's our authority. We do expect that person is not only he's impartial, but he's not impersonal. He is also a person who will be reciprocating. Just like we do something well in school or in sports, we expect that our parent or our authority will be expressing their joy or happiness, appreciation, support. So that means that really binds the relationship. So similarly, Krishna is reciprocal, and he is in helping us on our spiritual journey. He will always be waiting and watching to see how he can actually help us in any way. So we cannot expect him to be just an impartial judge. He's also a personal, like a personal coach. He's somebody who's helping us along the way. But it's like someone, if somebody is walking, somebody is handicapped, and he's walking, with great difficulty, and someone comes and takes the person's hand and helps. Now, if this person just brushes off the hand and says, I don't want you, just moves away, then what can the person do? The person will still wait. So Krishna is like that. Krishna is waiting for us. He's always there to support. But we need to take his help. We need to turn towards him. That's the difference. So he, at the same time, the ones who turn towards him, who love him, who give him special, who really put Krishna in the center, Krishna will reciprocate accordingly. So, if we take steps towards assisting him in his, because what is Krishna's goal finally? Krishna's objective would be that in his whole cosmic objective, he would want that everyone comes back to him, back to the spiritual world. We have chosen to come here. He wants us back. So he, in that mood, he's always waiting for us. And only thing is that first step has to be taken for us. So Arjun was like that soul, when we talk of the Mahabharata, that he was like the soul who was actually turning towards him. The example is given that like Arjun is like the dutiful son who who's been given his father's inheritance, and he's very judiciously protecting it and using it in the way his father would want him to do it, nurturing it and caring for it. While Duryodhan is the opposite. Duryodhan is like a son who is just bent on spending everything completely destroying his father's inheritance. Krishna is the father. And this analogy is actually very pertinent, because we see this in many households, especially in the rich, upper middle class households where some assets are left behind. You do find this very often, that you may find two different kind of approaches. Somebody who's only considering what I need and what I should do, and it's mine, and now nobody should be concerned with it. And then the person is spendthrift. And the other person is someone who is always thinking, what is my responsibility? What am I supposed to do? So Krishna in his devotional service, Arjuna in his devotional service, is discharging his duty. So Krishna is naturally reciprocating towards him and helping him. So if we see this from these two angles, that, this battlefield scene, if we see it from the angle of that two things, that Krishna is ultimately he's the ultimate father of all, and therefore he is universally giving the opportunity to everyone. Everyone has equal opportunity. And also that he is reciprocating as per our step. Then we will see that actually it's not that Krishna is taking Arjuna's side. Arjuna is taking Krishna's side. Arjuna is taking Krishna's side. Krishna is always there, and Krishna is also with Duryodhana. Because by removing, just like a father, same example, if the son is given a huge amount of inheritance, and the son, say, he turns an alcoholic, or he starts misusing it, and he can, in that condition, or he takes to drugs, and these are very, very these are commonplace situations. They are not abnormal situations. And then he is given that kind of money. But then he starts misusing it, because he is either he is very, not only just selfish, but he is not in his right frame of mind. He can completely. So in that sense, when the father has to take the painful decision to stop him, to remove his powers, the father is doing it out of his love. Father is not doing it out of vindictiveness. It is painful for him. So similarly, when Krishna is in Duryodhana's case, when Krishna is removing his power, there is always a hope that, he may turn towards Krishna, he may also, from his selfish desires, somebody who is completely against, may get a shock and actually correct his ways. So, in the same way, like how Krishna empowers somebody who is turning towards him, he also protects him. So Krishna's protection is given to those who want his protection. And then when he says that, he tells Arjuna that in this 9.31 slok, which is quoted in the purport, that he's telling Arjuna that declare it boldly, tell to the world that my devotee will never perish. So the interesting point here is, one is that yes, Krishna himself is telling Arjuna to declare it. But question is, why is Krishna not saying it himself? First thing would be that Krishna himself shared. Why is he saying it through his devotee? That's because Krishna wants that, Krishna has a promise that I will always protect my devotee. Krishna has a promise that he will always protect his devotee. Now, because if the devotee takes that pledge, that he speaks it, then Krishna will always protect it. He has to protect it. If Arjuna has spoken that Krishna will always protect his devotee. If it's spoken through his devotee, then Krishna will always protect. Krishna himself may break his promise. But if the devotee has taken a promise or he's spoken, then Krishna will do everything to protect it. And we have examples, many examples of Krishna breaking his promise to protect his devotee. The most famous one is in the Mahabharata itself, when in the thick of the battle, just on the penultimate day when Bhishma, maybe the seventh or eighth day when Bhishma Pitama was constantly being taunted by Duryodhana, that you are not fighting hard enough because you are taking Arjuna's side. You like the Pandavas more and you are the commander. So it was a constant provocation, constant nagging, constant irritant. And then it became so much for Bhishma Pitama once that then he said that, okay, tomorrow I promise that I vow. I've got these 5 arrows and I will destroy the 5 Pandavas. And Duryodhana very smartly took the arrows and said, okay, fine, I'll keep it. I'll make sure, because he didn't trust Bhishma also. He thought he might change his mind. So he said, okay, give it to me. Tomorrow I will give it to you. So of course, Krishna is a knower of the past, present, future. So Krishna knew what happened. So he told Arjuna that go to Duryodhana. And this is what you should ask him, because anyway, Duryodhana, there was in the Kshatriyas, if they have given any, so in the past when some obligation has been there, and he said that you are entitled to ask something, so then I will fulfill it. So Arjuna had something, so when Arjuna went and asked Duryodhana, so Duryodhana said, tell me what you want. He even said first, you want, I can stop the war, you want that? He knew that Arjuna will not say that. Arjuna said, no, I only want those 5 arrows. So Duryodhana gave him. As soon as Bhishma came to know, he knew that this is Krishna's doing, because Krishna wants Bhishma to break his promise. So then Bhishma, this is a beautiful reciprocation between Bhishma and, which is a different subject matter, between Bhishma and Krishna. Bhishma being a pure devotee of Krishna also. And Bhishma knew that he could not die unless he chose to die. But he knew that his time was up now, and he wanted to see Krishna break his promise for his devotee. Not out of any vengeance, out of his love, because out of his glorification. Because when a devotee loves the Lord, he wants to glorify, to show that this is another dimension of the Lord, that the Lord, how much he loves his devotee. That he goes to the extent that it is in history, in eternity, this is known that he will be, he has broken his promise for his devotee. So what more demonstration that Krishna loves his devotee? So that was Bhishma's intention. So Bhishma says that tomorrow I will make sure that I will definitely destroy even without the arrows. And the way he really fights next day, it looked as if it came to a situation where Krishna either had to choose. If he keeps his promise, and means if he doesn't intervene, then Arjuna will die. And if he has to save Arjuna, then he has to break his promise. And Krishna breaks his promise. This is the critical thing. When Krishna says that, declare it boldly that my devotee will never perish, that anyone who takes to Krishna consciousness will not be destroyed. So what is that destruction he's talking of? Because anyway, living entity is going to, is eternal. I mean, the spirit soul is eternal. So it's the body that is going to be destroyed anyway. So now, what Krishna is saying is not referring to that body. The destruction of the body is not the destruction. The real destruction is when we lose our own spiritual consciousness. When we lose our identity. That is real destruction. And that is something which he protects if we turn towards him. Because as a spiritual life, as Prabhupada said, that as in our spiritual life, once we understand that we're the spirit soul, whether we realize it or not, we have eternity, knowledge and bliss. The spirit soul is destined for that. But not knowing that we are living in a wretched condition, so that is destruction itself, isn't it? If we are not understanding today, and we are living in a very pathetic, wretched condition, not knowing our reality, that means by taking to a material life, we are destroyed. So when Krishna gives us the knowledge, and when we, by so many means, each one may have his own story, but ultimately we are fortunate that we get the chance. And if we were to try to live our life according to that knowledge, then actually Krishna will do everything to protect it. Now, how he protects it, that analysis is not for us. Because if we try to analyze it, we will never understand it. That's where the question of faith comes, faith from the scriptures. And also we see this in our own, around us. You've seen in the case of Srila Prabhupada's disciples, In the last 30, 40 years, all this is in front of us, and even the last 5, 10 years, and now as we go along, so many of our congregation, friends, so many devotees by the hundreds that we have seen who have been departing. And you've seen how Krishna protects their consciousness. Even those who may have wavered in the middle for some time, and they're taken to Krishna consciousness and then came back, towards the end, Krishna protects them. So, therefore we can see that actually, in one sense, we are already destroyed if we are going to live for a material objective only, and that can be considered as our final goal. Because if we are thinking that I am very much advancing in civilization, then unless we revive our original life of eternity, knowledge and bliss, we are not advancing. In fact, we are being destroyed by material energy, and we are defeated by the material energy. So therefore, Prabhupada said that destruction of my real life is materialism. Destruction of my real life is materialism. But our material vision makes us feel that no, my body needs to be protected. You know, and without that I don't feel protected. So if I'm in danger, or if, anything that is valuable to me should be protected. So we have somehow that feeling that, or if we have not, we have the feeling or we have the hope. When we come to Krishna and hope that, we may not directly say it, but if it's in our heart that Krishna, you know, I've started this new venture, or I've started this new job, and I've started new life, got married, I've invested so much in the stock market. We assume that, we are hoping that I've also, now I'm reciprocating, I'm going to Krishna, so Krishna will protect me. But Krishna's protection is for our spiritual consciousness. And for our spiritual consciousness, if these kind of thoughts are negative or drawing us back, then Krishna will do everything to shock us back into coming to the real understanding. So it is entirely up to Him. Or He may give us a long rope, and actually we may actually have some success initially and then have a bigger jolt. But there is nobody alive in history who has taken birth in this life who has not had these ups and downs and of severe nature. Everybody goes through that. And the only thing is that consciousness of why it is happening, why we have suffering, what causes suffering, that consciousness, if we have that understanding, Krishna is saying, I'll protect that understanding, which is the greatest protection that anyone can have. So we have many examples that Krishna ultimately always protects His sincere devotees' consciousness. Maharaj Katwanga had only one moment when he realized he was asked for a boon, and he asked the devatas whom he had actually fought for. And he said, how much time I have? And they said, you have just got one moment. His life he had led in such a way that just that within that one moment, immediately he just took cognizance of the thinking of Krishna, and he achieved in one moment. But then, as I said, we have so many examples of devotees in our own lives. What to speak of the acharyas and our paramparas that we have seen time and time again. In the Bhagavatam, we have so many stories, in the other scriptures also, that those who turn towards Krishna, Krishna will do everything to protect them. So, what Prabhupada said, that material existence is the destruction of our spiritual existence. This is something which is, it's a no-brainer in terms of logic. But the difficulty we find is because, why do we find a difficulty? Because the attraction and attachment to material existence is so strong, and we're not even aware of it. Then we don't develop that faith. And when we don't develop that faith, we think that let me put one leg here, one leg here. So actually, worse than the suffering is the ignorance that we are suffering. We're not even knowing that. At least if we have the knowledge, and if we deviate sometimes, Krishna will make sure that we'll be remembering it, and then when we hear a class, and when we hear, and we again say that, well, actually it was my foolishness or my ignorance, I went into this way or did that way. But then we realize that Krishna is always waiting for us. So it's like having a stumble, then getting up, falling, getting up. That effort is something which has to keep on. So it's not that we take to this and then everything will be rosy and we have now got bliss. No, it's not like that. But this process, that is why when we talk of sadhana, sadhana means that there is a constant regulatory effort which is primarily for keeping us connected to the realities. Because there is anyway enough of things which are outside our outside reality, which we think is reality, and which we anyway have to most of our time is spent there. So therefore, when we are out there, and then when our consciousness gets attached to those kind of, that kind of environment, which is giving us an illusion. When we see everything around us, if we are working somewhere, we are walking somewhere, we are studying somewhere, everywhere it is completely different. And then when we see externally smiling faces, happy faces, joking and all, then we slowly feel that this is the fun. And then slowly we don't see the reality or the connection with what our spiritual ultimate purpose is. So it is not to say that we don't have fun, it's not to say that we don't enjoy. It's to keep the reality and the perspective of what is our real goal and that we don't deviate from it. Within that, we have our occupation, whether we are taking care of a family, we are studying, whatever we are doing, we have to do that. And like how this example is there, that like Arjuna in the battlefield, he concentrated fully in his occupation. He did a brilliant job of his occupation also in terms of his archery, in terms of winning the war. So we have to do as best as we can. But he had the greatest, because he was humble and he had surrendered to Krishna, he was doing it as a devotional service. So if we are able to keep Krishna, just remember Krishna in any way we can, connecting him so many ways, you know, and those are things which can be very creative, very productive, very innovative for us. Like somehow we, it may be a very surreal experience. You may be in a very hi-fi atmosphere, in the, everyone is suited, booted, and it's very discussing and some kind of thing. But if you have Krishna with you, it can be in a photo form, in his name form, at least you know that, you can say, okay, now let's see how this goes. Krishna wants it, it'll happen, doesn't want it, not happen. So we make an effort, but there is a connection that remains. So in any way, even if you're giving an exam, if you're studying hard, we do everything. We should not just say, Krishna, it's up to you. If I get an F, it's your glory, and if I get an A, it's your glory. No, it's Krishna is going to reciprocate. If you want an F, you will get an F. So we have to do everything we can. But ultimately, what kind of exam paper comes, what kind of remembrance we have at that time, what kind of thinking. So oftentimes we prepared well. I know one of my closest friends, and he's still a very close friend, and he did very, very well and very helpful person in school. But at the key moment, he became blank in one of the key exams. He just blanked out. He couldn't remember. Only once it happened, and it was a major exam. So, it can happen. And on the other hand, sometimes you're prepared less and you see everything is there. So, Krishna will do what he has to do. But our idea is to at least pray to him, say that Krishna, I have studied, now it's up to you, whatever you want. And not to say that Krishna, if you give me 9.5 on 10, I'm yours. If it is less than that, then I'll have to think twice. So then that is not, we can't reciprocate. I mean, we can't bargain. We need to be completely surrendered. So the challenge for us is, why does it become so difficult for us to understand this? Because, see, material energy, His Grace Vraj Bihari Prabhu some time ago was giving class and he gave wonderful understanding that material energy is also very shrewd. It doesn't give, like today I may be feeling happy, but you are feeling sad. And you are also, everyone is at different times. Not that everyone is happy at the same time, everyone is sad at the same time. Because if we are all miserable at the same time, we'll all come together and say that we come to realization. But she'll never allow us. So you go through up. So when I'm miserable, but I see you happy, then I know that maybe something that I've done, I need to only do this and I'll get happy. So the thing is that the trick is that we keep thinking, I have to do it. In my struggle, my effort, I'm the one who can cause the happiness. And then I do get some happiness, momentary comforts. So sometime, immediately we think that I got it. I got the formula. This is how I need to do it. And then we forget the Krishna's equation completely. So material energy will keep us divided, confused, because we are, each one is never, it's like compartmentalized. How the British divided and rule was their policy in India. They never let everyone together. Similarly, each living entity will go through its own cycle, but they don't coincide. So you are going through happiness, distress at different times, different moods, different thinking. So therefore, we see others and we see happy smiling faces, somebody's brushing his teeth and having a big smile. We think we should take that toothpaste and I'll be happy. That is the foolishness, that is the other thing. Or I tie these shoelaces and I'll be happy. So, it is, and we actually believe it. I put on this tie, then I'll be happy. So you see smiling faces and you see some product. So if it is up to us, if we were to follow that logic, then Krishna will reciprocate accordingly and say, well, that's what you want. But Krishna doesn't want that. Krishna is actually constantly thinking how we can come back to him. So, so he's always thinking how we can get out of this world, how we can come back to him. But we think that my permanent happiness is round the corner. You know, I can be blissful because I just need to, I tasted it this way, it had happened in the past. So now I just need to use the same formula, it will happen again. But there is never a same similar moment. So that is where the spiritual practices come, that actually it gives us that perspective and understanding. Srimad Bhagavatam, what does Srimad Bhagavatam do? It's like when you are in a completely dark room and then suddenly the light comes, you know, then you see everything very clearly. So this knowledge that we get through the scriptures, to Srimad Bhagavatam, that actually gives us the understanding of what is causing suffering, what is how we can get out of suffering, and who am I. So in a sense, Srimad Bhagavatam is actually providing us the real protection. Knowledge is providing us a real protection. And then that knowledge that, okay, this is, I need to accept a spiritual master. I need to accept authority. The authority will tell us, okay, the wise authority will tell us, you need to chant every day to start the cleansing process. That is real knowledge, and that protection is the real protection. Because then we understand the true value of spiritual life. In the same lecture, Vraj Bihari Prabhu also gave analogy, or actually an example, of how we get bewildered and still not understand. He said when, in the early days when he had joined the temple, that time we had an orphanage here, Lady Northcote Hindu Orphanage. So he had heard from the people who control the, means who, the authorities of the orphanage, that, you know, say there are one or two very mischievous boys, extremely mischievous boys, and they would constantly, you know, like they would dominate. So the others individually would find it difficult to retaliate. So they had to, so what they would do is that in the night, when this mischievous boy would go to sleep, then at 11 o'clock or 12 o'clock, say those remaining 8 or 9 devotee boys who had planned this together, they would get up. And then they will quietly come, and when this boy is sleeping, they'll put one blanket on him and then start kicking and beating him, really bashing him. And then after a minute or two, when he's really been, he doesn't know what is happening, he's sleeping and he can't even get out because they're all pummeling him. And then one person just whistles, and at that moment, the remaining 7 or 8 of them, they'll put blankets, another 7 blankets on him, and then quickly go and go to sleep. So he takes so much time to get out of that mess, and when he actually sees, he's actually bruised black and blue and he's been beaten badly. But when he looks around and he sees everyone is sleeping, he doesn't know what is happening. So he said, this is what material life does to us. You know, we have our own objective we are going through, and then we get beaten badly, we don't know what is happening to us. Suddenly we get, you know, we go to the doctor and the doctor says you've got pneumonia and you've got bronchitis or something, and then, you know, our whole world becomes, you know, affected like that. Or we have invested somewhere and the stock market goes down, and or some somebody has sued us or something. That something happens, one big new, and then our whole life gets derailed. And we don't know what happened. We didn't do anything, why it happened suddenly. Or sometimes 2-3 things happen. And then when that gets sorted out and we are, before we can even enjoy that, something else happens. So we are just buffeting back and forth. We don't know what is happening. So it's like being, you know, bashed here and there and not even knowing. You know, you're so bewildered and dazed. Where is it coming from? We don't know. So, that is the way material energy works with us. So therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam gives us that, so removing the ignorance, it doesn't remove the suffering. I mean, how much we suffer, it depends on us and how we understand it. So we may still feel the pain, but it is still an understanding of how we go forward and how we cope with it. And how we can take shelter, how we can minimize it, how we can take help from others. So therefore that, and also what it does is that knowledge gives us a helicopter view. Means it gives us a perspective from an aerial view. So you have a larger perspective of life.
You know, that I am not only for this. It's not like my life is only from, you know, 9 to 6, or my life is not only up to the age of 60. You know, for those who are very materially successful and they think that that's it. What happens after, at some point in time? Everything is temporary. So it is, we get so caught up in one aspect only. Even mothers have seen that, you know, they sometimes are, they've given their whole life, you know, sometimes for the family. And then the family may not reciprocate accordingly. Or the, you know, the children may be doing their own things. So then there's disappointment, then there's anxiety, there is complete frustration and bewilderment as to what happened. So we don't realize, but well, the Bhagavatam gives us that ultimately, Prabhupada said there are main four problems in life, birth, old age, disease and death. Ultimately, that fact is that when we are born, we are going to die. Ultimately, we know that the dying is not for the body. The body is going to die, but the spirit soul is eternal. And what is the function of the spirit soul? So if we have these basic links and we cling to it, even if we do not realize it on a day-to-day basis, but nevertheless, Krishna will somehow provide us at times when we really want to understand. Because if we start developing this kind of circle of connection, then whom will we turn to? We will have, after some time, you will not turn to your best friend in school because his life has gone completely, you know, different. There's nothing common, you know. There is very, very superficial link. So you're anyway going to come back to your friends. So, you know, for example, you know, we, after 40 years in our school, somebody had a suggestion, one person took the initiative and, you know, after, on the 40th anniversary, and we had not met, except two or three, we had not met any of the other 80 boys in the two divisions. So we could manage to connect over 40 or 45 of them, about 9 or 10 and already departed, so on. But then what we found, we met once or twice, you know, after that. We found that, you know, it was fun in a way to reconnect and all memories about the teachers and school and all, because now we are, you know, 65, not 17. But then after that, the lives are so different. Then I find that my circle, even if the relatives, if you go to some social function with the relatives, it is like you do a duty because you have to do it. But where is my life? My life is anyway, you know, whether I'm following them or not, whether I mentally may get upset with someone or not, but ultimately my family is this only. So that is the advantage of actually somehow sticking to the process. And if we are more attentive and more sincere, then the Bhagavatam really gives us all the answers and also gives us answers to how to cope with it. And we should know that Krishna is not only removing our distress, but he's also constantly thinking of how we can do it. There are so many instances where Krishna has been coming forward and helping. But ultimately, unless we turn towards him, as they say, you know, that you can take the horse to the water, but you can't make the horse drink. You can, everything you can provide. So it's like that, like you're walking on a cliff. You can, the child is there, you can bring the child on the road. But if the child insists on going off, then there's nothing you can do. So ultimately, Krishna is doing everything. He's also there. It's only that we have to turn towards him and understand how he will be willing to protect us at all times. So in all this, no, we use our intelligence to try to come to Krishna, but we don't try to analyze how Krishna is working. That we never know, how Krishna is protecting us. So we, Prabhupada would say that in this connection that we want to be seen, when Prabhupada was asked, no, have you seen Krishna? So Prabhupada said, okay, we don't want to see Krishna, we want to be seen by Krishna. Because we don't even have the eyes to see it, Krishna. You know, if we go to see, what is our capacity? You know, we have such limitations of our senses. We can't even hear outside this room. We can't even see behind our back, behind our head. And we want to see Krishna. What is our capacity to see? If he comes also, we will not see. If we are told that Krishna is then his holy name, we don't believe it. So we think Krishna will come exactly in this form, and he will come as if he's doing us a favor. So we don't have the capacity to see him. So Prabhupada said that our duty is that we come here not to see Krishna as much as we would like Krishna to see us. And Krishna should see us in that I am a devotee, struggling devotee, I'm trying to serve you. please help me to, the Mahamantra also says that, please engage me in your service. So our objective is to, as Prabhupada said, that we want to serve Krishna in such a way that he wants to see us. You know, you may say, like, I was told that during Jimmy Carter's time, Jimmy Carter was the U.S. president of the USA. And that time, one of the devotees, the leaders in the New York temple, I think, they were very keen that they wanted to sell books, and they wanted to actually make go and meet the president in the White House. So, I mean, that is quite an audacious thought, but he said, why not? And of course, they tried and they didn't get any appointment. But somehow it happened that Jimmy Carter on television saw these devotees dancing in some festival, and he was quite intrigued by it. So he told his chief of staff that I would like to meet these fellows, these devotees, and call them tomorrow. So they got a call, and the next day they came to see him. So it's like that. If Krishna wants to see us, he will do anything then. Not that we're hankering for that, but if he wants, when we want, because ultimately we want to go back to him and he wants us to come back. So it is up to him. He sets the timetable. We only take pleasure and happiness in following the process, and the process is joyful. Krishna himself says, and we also experience it to the extent, at least we have seen moments of those, that when we are together, when we don't have any other agendas, and when we are actually in a spiritual world temporarily also, we created a spiritual world in the temple, or when we are with devotees, when we have got that mood. So our job is, once you've seen that, then we only have to try to extend it and see, can I extend it more? Somehow, that is what our, if we are chanting at home, somehow we try to create that atmosphere, if not all the time, at least some of the time, how we can recreate and reconnect with Krishna all the, in such a way. So all these steps of the acquiring knowledge, following the regular principles, is primarily for us to see that we can lead a life in which Krishna can see us. So we'll stop here. And Granthar Srimad Bhagavatam ki jaya. Thank you.